The Tom Woods Show, episode 1996.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. Well, we're talking about a topic that is on the minds of just about everybody these days, and it's not COVID, although it's not entirely removed from COVID either, but that is the subject of national divorce. And I'm joined today by Matt Asher, who's just written, let's say, a tract on this, which we're going to get into in just a second. But Matt, I'd like you to actually introduce yourself to the audience. I guess you were with Liberty Magazine a long time ago, so you've been in these circles for quite some time. So talk about your activities these days and who you are.
Well, thanks, Tom, for having me on. I was indeed at Liberty Magazine real briefly many years ago. Since then, I've done a number of things. I have done writing. I ran some free weekly publications. And more recently, I have been doing podcasting, and now I have a radio show here in South Florida, where I moved about 9 months ago to the Florida Keys.
Okay. And when you made that decision to move to Florida, where were you coming from?
I was coming from Toronto, a wonderful city where we lived for over a dozen years, and they shut down with the lockdowns. They opened up very briefly over the summer of 2020, and then when they shut down again towards the end of 2020, we realized it. We needed to get out of there. So we did an exhaustive look of mostly coastal areas and finally decided on here in the Florida Keys as the ideal place to be.
I want to talk about your book, and which there's a unique way to get it. So at least as of this recording, if people are looking for it on Amazon, they won't find it, I believe. So we'll talk about how they can get it. But it's called Breakup, A Freedom Lover's Guide to Surviving the End of Empire, which is a title that I just love. I mean, you're just singing from my hymn book 1,000% there. Of course, if you were being interviewed by most people, they would start by asking, why? Why do you think the country needs to break up? Now, I may still ask that. And, you know, I'm even now I'm wondering if I should. But I'll just say that, as you know, the vast majority of people listening are already convinced. They already get why this is necessary. But so how about if I phrase it this way? Suppose you're talking to the average person who, let's say, isn't ideologically committed one way or the other and finds this idea strange and vaguely threatening. What would you say to make it sound reasonable to that person?
I would start by pointing out that this is not really a matter of if, it's more a matter of when and the exact nature of the breakup. We already have begun to break up, and the collapse of the American empire is already well in progress. I think everybody can recognize that we have accumulated a set of problems that, if you think about it for any length of time, are clearly insurmountable. Setting aside the cultural and political differences, all the tribalism, all those other things, we have debt that cannot be repaid and will not be repaid. We are a late stage empire, and we're a late stage empire with deep divisions within us, which means that our options are to continue to treat politics as a winner-takes-all game where some subset of the population gets to decide exactly how the other subset is going to live, or we're going to be headed towards something that is significantly worse than a controlled breakup. It will be a civil war or one side dominating the other, or I mentioned some other strategies or some other outcomes that are possible in the book. But by and large, if we don't go down the road of recognizing that we have irreconcilable differences and do that in the near future, we're headed to a dark place in the context of a crumbling empire.
All right. So let's think about COVID in the context of this, because is it just a matter of COVID brought out what we're... Well, we can see from Trump that there were obviously deep-seated divisions within the country. but COVID accentuated this still further. It was complicated by the presence of Trump. But even had there been no Trump, I think COVID and the government response would have accentuated the presence of what would appear to be irreconcilable differences. We have people who think, you know, let's say we've got, I don't know what the percentages of the country are, but big chunks, each of whom think the other chunk is just hopelessly clueless on an important matter and is just cavalier about the way they treat people's lives. Both sides think that of the other. So is that how you situate us in terms of COVID and national divorce?
I think you're absolutely right that COVID was an accelerant, or more specifically, the response to COVID was most certainly an accelerant. I'm here because of that, and many, many people are moving because of that. We are already balkanizing, and a lot of that is happening because people's lives have been directly and in some cases very, very negatively affected by the policies that were enacted. People are moving to the places that have the response to COVID that is more suitable with their mentality. And then as those divisions start to increase, that becomes kind of a loop where people are going to places and then they're going to be, in a sense, fortifying the political scene in that place for that particular tribe, which is going to in turn drive some people away and attract other people to that. The other thing that happened with COVID is that what we saw was the rise of effectively a new state religion. And there aren't that many cases where you have a state religion that arises that you don't end up with really deep divisions, balkanization, or outright civil war. And it is indeed a case where the government has created the situation where there is so much fear among so many people in a population with kind of a weak traditional religious presence at the moment. And so what has happened is people are orienting their entire lives around the disease. And that allows the government to say, well, if you people actually care about it, these are the measures that you need to implement. And so they will go along with that because this is the primary thing that they're concerned about. It's their North Star in their lives is caring about COVID. And so that's kind of the perfect storm of opportunity for the government to have a group of people who are completely oriented to what the CDC says or what the government says about how you should live your life to be a good human being. I don't know if you saw that clip from the new governor of New York who had the necklace that said vaccinate. She said, you know, the vaccine is here from God.
Oh, that I heard that she said that, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, so she's wearing a necklace that says vaccinated, right? It could be a cross around her neck. It's not. And she's speaking at a church, right? So this creating this kind of a new state religion creates a situation where the believers are fanatics, right? They're cultists. And so everybody else who is outside of that, they're having their entire world upturned if they live in certain areas of the country by this new state religion and its set of beliefs about masking and vaccines and mandates of all kinds. And when you have a situation like that, it becomes what many people are now living for, you know, to live this proper COVIDian lifestyle, and what is a horror to a lot of other people.
All right. So I think it's clear enough, and obviously you agree, that we've reached a point where people are even willing to acknowledge openly that maybe this can't be fixed through some political solution. Or maybe there is no philosophical argument we can make that can once and for all win over everybody to our way of thinking. That maybe this is a hopeless task and it's expending an enormous amount of resources and it's not making anybody happy. I mean, are we looking at this American project or experiment, as the neocons like to call it? Is anybody looking at it and saying, this is really, really making us all happy? But yet that's the purpose of it. Presumably, it was supposed to provide for that. It was supposed to provide for our mutual security. And presumably, its existence would make us happier and more content than if it didn't exist. But it's obviously not making us happy. It's making us angrier. It's making us more rivalrous because each side is thinking, I just need to get hold of that government apparatus and then I'll make those stupid idiots pay. And I personally think that the vaccine mandates are more about punishing perceived political dissidents than they are about health. that here's a...
Absolutely. And scapegoating them.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Here's a golden opportunity to take people we can't stand. And yeah, we, you know, some of them might be progressive, so there's going to be some collateral damage, but most of them are the kind of people we hate and we can ruin them. Do you really think Joe Biden and his people are above that kind of thing? So that's where we are. That's where we are. And people are now willing to talk about it. I remember, 5 years ago even, we would talk about a topic like this, and it would be the sort of thing that only, you know, you and I and, you know, a few dozen other people want to talk about. And now suddenly national divorce is all over the place. I mean, I presume as somebody with a book on this, you're particularly alert to this, but you must be seeing it a lot.
Absolutely, for sure. And you see it even not just among the people who have been banging the drum for it for a long time, folks on the right or the libertarian side, but also from folks on the left. I'm sure you saw the Sarah Silverman video where she was talking about it. And she's like, hey, I have this idea, guys. Maybe we should just split up here. The message is getting out and people are seeing all across the country that you're right, that this may not be working out so well for us. And so they're looking for a way out.
So let's talk then about, let's say, potential ways that American history could go from here. You actually have a chapter, I think it's chapter 5, where you handicap the likely outcomes. What is the likelihood of such and such happening? Because one outcome, indeed, is the breaking up of the country. And you describe this as an inevitability, which it may be, but there's a difference between an inevitability that's going to occur 10 years from now and an inevitability that's going to occur 10,000 years from now. So somewhere between now and then, we could go down a variety of different paths. We could go down some very, very authoritarian paths. We could go down a path where in the immediate run, there's more decentralization as places with different worldviews simply go their own way. Can you take a minute to handicap for us at least a few of the what you consider to be the plausible scenarios?
Absolutely, yeah. So one of them is that we have a national divorce, a separation, and that's explicit and not just what's happening now where people are balkanizing and moving to be with people who are like-minded. So that is one scenario. Another one is that we have a segregation, which in a sense would probably end up being subjugation. So you have the class of people who refuse to get vaccinated, who refuse to go along with the new dominant religion and the new COVIDian way of life. And they become, as is beginning to happen right now, and in fact driving a lot of the separation, they're kicked out of jobs, they're being denied entry into various places. So that's the segregation or subjugation option. We have civil war as a possibility. It certainly could come to that. I think everybody hopes that it doesn't. Anyone who's not a sociopath hopes it doesn't, but it's definitely a possibility. It's possible that the weakness of America in this time, not just from all the things we're talking about, but just its global presence, and you saw the weakness of the United States and the bungled pullout from Afghanistan, it's possible that a door has opened to foreign conquest. That often happens in a late stage empire. So that's one way it could go. Another way is fascism. The increasing drive to dominate everybody's life from the left could provoke a response from the right, and that response could be fascistic. It's a possibility. And then I also talk about the kind of Dom sub fusion, which I refer to as the host solution after the Stephanie Meyer book, where you have an alien that begins to control people's brains, but eventually people push back and some kind of fusion happens where what starts out as a subjugation ends up with some form of power sharing because the people who are being dominated eventually begin to assert some level of control or get some level of control back. I see those as the main options, and certainly some combination of those is possible.
The idea of separation, there's something implicit in the exercise of the implementation of this idea. And that is that in a way we're abandoning, let's say, the confidence that we might have had as a species in the power of reason. That I think since the Enlightenment there's been, although with some challenges, there's been nevertheless this sense that reason is the path forward, and that if we all sit down together and leave our individual interests aside and pledge simply to exercise our reasoning ability, we should be able to come to similar, if not identical, conclusions. We should be able to reach consensus together as we reason out the problems that face us. And it just doesn't look like that's the case. Now, that doesn't mean that reason doesn't work. There are a lot of explanations for why this isn't happening, but we've gotten to a point where, although I still want to argue with crazy people sometimes because it helps the normal people formulate their own arguments with, you know, when they're dealing with family members who might be confused or not know what to think, I want people to be equipped with good arguments. But it's as if we're saying we've reached a point at which we're done arguing.
It does seem like we've reached the point. I agree with you. And I think that, so one of the things that was really helpful to my thinking was looking into the work of Vin Armani. He was one of the early guests on my podcast. And he talks about this as being the beginning of the dim age, an age in which we have the facts and the data, but the information doesn't seem to be going in and we're not really updating our priors with new information. So it's out there, people can find it, but in part because of that huge shock of fear that happened in the early days of COVID, the narratives, once they're laid down, they seem highly resilient against new information. I think that's the nature of the moment that we're in. And I don't know that there's that much that can be done about that. The people who still believe in reason and facts and so forth, they can try to go their own way. But I don't really see a resurgence of enlightenment values, at least within the dominant culture as it is right now.
So now that we've gotten to that point where the matter is, look, I don't even want to... In fact, I sometimes see this in Michael Malice's Twitter feed. Occasionally he'll say to somebody, I'm not interested in persuading you. I just don't want to share a country with you.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just say that to someone who is incorrigible, and it would be a waste of your time to try to persuade. So let's jump into chapter 6 of your book now, which I suspect you took particular pleasure in writing. I can't know that for sure. I can ask you now, but I can't know that for sure. But this is the chapter in which you try to explain to people what it is they can be doing in the meantime. I mean, given that it seems, again, we don't know what the time frame is, but it seems no longer implausible that the U.S. could no longer be the U.S. at one point, that it could, that something could happen to it, to divide it. So what do people do in the meantime?
Yeah.
So you've got a bunch of different approaches, and we could add, I'm sure, many more as well.
And let me actually, so I encourage people to go to mattasher.substack.com and check out all the chapters. Some of them are free, some require a subscription for the full book. But to add one that is one I didn't put in the book, but save for our conversation here, I am right now thinking about the way in which we can use more mock courts, kangaroo courts, to actually put people on trial. I was just looking again, I don't know if you know the story about the developmentally disabled, I think actually Down syndrome girl, young girl who was being forcibly masked at school. And she's not a communicative person in terms of she can't speak. But, you know, week after week, she was being masked, forcibly masked at school.
Yeah.
She was trying to take it off. And so they taped it on. They used cords to put it on. And the father finally found out because they forgot one day to take it off before she took the school bus home. So she came home with this taped and bound mask to her face. Now, he's suing and so forth. But I think that for instances like that, and for a lot of the instances here, we're not going to get resolution from the judicial system. We need to set up an alternate set of courts and hold our own effectively Nuremberg trials for administrators like that. And if they want to be part of the process and be part of their own defense, let them be that. And if not, then so be it. But put them on trial and make that trial completely public and put it out there into the culture that people who do things like this, they will be held accountable, and not just held accountable in the sense that a trial will slowly work its way through the courts and then maybe there'll be some settlement on the side, but very publicly, very directly, the people who are destroying the country, they need to be held to account. And the people who are doing these things that are awful, let's hold them to account. So that's one that didn't make it into the book as a strategy. But other ones, I've got a variety of things there. I'm in favor of people using online to the extent that they can until they get kicked off, and posting memes and communicating with others. I'm in favor of people forming NATO-style alliances with other individuals and not necessarily making those public, but letting it be known among you and the people who you connect with that you have each other's back and that you will support each other if challenges come along that are provoked by the attempt to shut people down, shut down their livelihoods, and so forth. I think the ultimate strategy, at least for right now, is to do what we did and to move to some place that is more embracing of your values. Life is way better for us here in the Florida Keys than it was in Toronto.
And incidentally, the folks in Florida, even though, as you say, things are much better here, could use, let's say, some reinforcements, because there are still parts of the state with craziness going on and crazy school policies and whatever else. There's still a lot of nuttiness and masks and weirdness still to be dealt with. I can't get up right at this very moment in which you and I are speaking. Florida now has the lowest case rate of any state in the entire U.S. It was, as of a few days ago, the continental U.S. Now it's the entire United States. And I just came back from a little local grocery store where everybody's masked up, and most of them are masks that you couldn't possibly think are effective. I mean, at least I understand why somebody wearing an N95 mask thinks it's doing something. I understand that. But you can't possibly think a piece of paper in front of your face is doing anything. You can't. And yet this is still going on. So what would it take? Florida's got the best case rate in the country, and they're still walking around like this. So we could use the reinforcements. I'll just put it that way.
I agree with that completely. Down here, fortunately, we actually passed a milestone, at least what I consider a milestone, about a month ago, where the servers at restaurants began taking off their masks. And now it's very rare that you go to a restaurant and the servers are wearing masks. And people do, you do still occasionally see people in the grocery stores here where I am with masks. So it's less and less common. And usually it tends to be more older folks, which I think that once that cycle begins, that will become self-reinforcing, and that once people see that only where older people are wearing masks, well, then people who are younger will begin taking that off, the few ones who are still wearing it. But overall, for sure, we here in Florida could use as many freedom-minded people as we can possibly get.
Hey, everybody, just a quick reminder, Halloween is coming up, and kids are going to be coming to your house for candy. But in between children coming to your door, you can be doing something very important for your loved ones, and that is going to Policy Genius and looking for life insurance. Because if somebody relies on your financial support, whether it's a child or an aging parent or even a business partner, you need life insurance. And most people, to provide for their families properly, need 10 times the life insurance coverage they get through their employer. Well, Policy Genius makes it easy to compare quotes from over a dozen top insurers all in one place. You could save $1,300 or more per year on life insurance by using Policy Genius. Eligible applicants can get covered in as little as a week thanks to an award-winning policy option that swaps the standard medical exam requirement for a simple phone call. Getting started is easy. First, head to policygenius.com. In minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need and compare personalized quotes to find your best price. When you're ready to apply, the Policy Genius team will handle the paperwork and scheduling for free. Policy Genius does not add on extra fees. Well, head to policygenius.com to get started right now. Policy Genius. When it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. I was just at the Mises Institute Supporters Summit over the weekend in St. Petersburg here in Florida, and I played one of the talks from that event, which is basically more of a conversation between Jeff Deist and me. I played that as episode 1995 of the show. So if you missed that one, you definitely want to go back and listen to that. Now, unfortunately, the audience, and this happens at a lot of events like this, was not mic'd up at all. So in order to get the audience reaction so that you can hear it, and so that you can hear it as robustly as I heard it, you need to have wireless mics stationed all throughout the venue, and then they pick up the crowd reaction. So you couldn't hear the crowd reaction, unfortunately, which is most unfortunate, because in the middle of the presentation, this was a dinner event. This was the end of the supporters summit, and we were at a dinner. And during dessert, Jeff and I went up and gave our presentation and had our conversation. And I pointed out that I thought the venue was very nice. It's very old-timey, the Don Cesar in St. Petersburg. And I said, I love my room. I love the view and the surroundings and the facilities, and everybody's been great. But, and I was pointing out that at this venue, all the employees are masked and almost none of the guests are masked. So it's like this weird two-tier society. So in the midst of praising the facility, I said, but I would say to the management, and I'm saying this as the waiters are bringing the desserts to everybody, unmask these employees. And of course, everyone is cheering like crazy. Can't hear it, unfortunately, but they're cheering like crazy. And I'm saying, now look, enough is enough. I mean, Florida's case rate is super low. Even if we don't even want to argue the effectiveness of masks, if you're not going to take them off now, when are you going to take them off? I said, nobody in this room is afraid of any of your employees. Take the masks off. And one of the servers gave me a big thumbs up. And then I noticed that a couple of them were no longer wearing them, or they'd pulled them down below their noses. You know, you have to do that sometimes. And that gave me great pleasure.
That's the right approach overall. It's some of the approaches that I talk about are essentially being pretty loud and vocal about what your beliefs are, even if it's uncomfortable. I regularly tell people to take off their masks if they're talking to me one-on-one. When people who come to the house to do something, you know, are wearing a mask, I tell them, take it off. It doesn't bother me at all to see your face, so let me see your face. And in general, in those kinds of social situations, being willing to speak up, it's a viable strategy. It may make you uncomfortable, but it'll also make them uncomfortable. And there's a chance that they would prefer to be not so uncomfortable. And also they would probably prefer to be not so uncomfortable wearing the mask all day. There is definitely a push among the elites to essentially use the mask as a sign of, you know, of the two-tiered society. We may very well head to a situation where in a lot of places, the mask is just what's worn by the servants, period, or the help, or whatever else it is. And I don't want to be a part of that. And so, I'll do whatever I can. And I appreciate you doing what you can to try to stem that, you know, that tide.
Can we talk a little bit more? Because you have, well, first of all, you have a chapter, A Vote With Your Feet, but you've already been talking about that. Is there any place other than the Florida Keys or Florida more generally that you recommend for people to move to?
That's a really interesting question. So actually in late 2020, my wife and I went to Sweden to check that out as a possibility because, you know, we wanted to know, is it really what they say it is, what's going on there? And just to enjoy the freedom of being able to go out to eat and not wear a mask and so forth. And it was lovely there in terms of being easy to immigrate to. It wasn't. And in fact, while we were there, they reshut the borders for coming back. And I've looked at other possibilities in other countries. And officially speaking, at least, there's not that many that are open and free and where, as far as I can tell, people aren't wearing masks. So the options are somewhat limited. And then when it comes to the US, Texas maybe is a possibility. And I'm actually very excited about the work that Bob Murphy and others are doing in terms of the idea of a Texit. So Texas splitting off and, I guess, reforming their own place. So that's an exciting possibility that people might want to look into. Though if they're thinking about going to Austin, which is where Malice went to, it's not very free and open. It's a blue city in a red state. And they still have a lot of restrictions there and a culture that isn't that free and open. So I do think right now our options are somewhat limited in terms of where do you go.
Well, I was flipping through a thread that I have here on my phone from one of the social media platforms I'm on where this topic came up, because I was trying to find one comment I couldn't find it. But in terms of the long run, okay, let's stipulate, let's just say for the sake of argument that the world becomes absolutely 100% normal, back to normal, like nothing ever happened in the middle of 2022. Now, whether or not that's plausible, forget it. Let's just say that that's the case. When I go ahead and plan for the rest of my life, which I hope will be long and robust maybe I'm not going to live in Florida the rest of my life. Maybe I don't want to live in Florida the rest of my life because I might want to live somewhere else because I might want to live closer to, you know, friends or closer to certain attractions I like. But I have to factor in to those calculations. If anything like this ever happened again, I don't want to live in a lockdown place. I would want to have some kind of insurance policy that I would want to have a house in Florida, or even in the longer run, I would wonder about looking into citizenship in other countries as some kind of a hedge against future uncertainty. For example, Sweden looks very attractive, and it's, you know, you have to jump through some hoops. It's true in Sweden if you want to do this, but it's not like the most restrictive country in the world either. So, I mean, I'm even thinking like this down the road. I want to have an escape hatch somewhere in the world in case this should happen again. So this, in other words, so even 20 years from now, this is way in the past, like 9/11. It's way in the past. It will still be influencing my decisions about where I live and, you know, where probably my kids should live.
I think that there is no doubt that the COVID response, pandemic response, is going to leave a very long and wide shadow. It certainly will for me. I loved living in Toronto. It was a great city, great restaurants, lots of fun things to do, very livable, walkable. We had a beautiful place there, but I will never go back there. Maybe even to visit, I don't know, but I certainly won't be living there again. And I don't even know if I would live in a big city again. And that's a funny thing for me to say, having spent, you know, 13 years loving living in the big city of Toronto, which if people don't know, it's about 2.5 million people and twice that in the metro area. It's giant and wonderful. It was wonderful, but it changes the way you think about where you want to live. And part of the reason that we chose specifically the Keys is we're on the water here. If you want an escape hatch, well, you know, one good way to do it is to be at the very, almost the very bottom here of the United States. And who knows, you know, in 20 years, the political winds have changed and we're taking a boat to Cuba.
Let's see. We are at, I'm just going to look at where we're, I'm looking at the clock. Oh, geez, we're after. Okay. I told you I'd keep you for about half an hour because really what I want, I'd love people to subscribe to your Substack and I'd love for them to read this book. I want to get people's thoughts on it. See, your book is quite complementary to what I've been doing. I have in large part been speaking in the abstract, or I've been talking about American history and the Constitution, why secession is perfectly legitimate and nothing to be ashamed of and nothing that we need to avoid for any reason. And then I've had Brian McClanahan on. We talked a little bit about some of the practical steps, but you're going beyond, well beyond what I've done on this. And I think the two things work together very nicely. So I'd like people to see the sorts of things you have to say. You do point out in here the importance of, in a way, you don't put it this way, but spiritually seceding. That is to say, you know, I don't need to care what this Hollywood actor thinks. And it's okay for me to be different from that person and to dissent from that person. What I wish we could harness is the anti-authoritarianism and anti-authority instincts of that supposedly exist in young people and say to them, you could be part of the Borg and be a predictable robot like everybody else, or you can be one of us who, you know, give the middle finger to this whole thing and laugh at it and ridicule all these people for being a bunch of, you know, ants in a herd. And we're having a great old time building something better than what they have in store for us. And we've done so not selling our souls and not desperately trying to conform or looking on TV to see what I'm supposed to think. You know, maybe that might be a little bit more appealing if you really, really want to be your own person. And I guess I'd also want to say, you know what? When it comes time for you to graduate from high school, they're gonna lie to you at your commencement ceremony. Somebody's going to give a speech about the importance of you being yourself and being your own person. And let me tell you something, that is the last thing in the world they want. They're terrified of that. That is the last thing in the world they want. They're gaslighting you when they say that. There's nothing they want less than for you to be your own person. They want you to repeat what every rock star, movie star, college professor, CNN talking head, and corporate CEO has to say. That's what they want. The last thing they want is for you to be genuinely your own person. If there's any among you who still yearn to be your own person, we'll welcome you with open arms. That's your choice.
I think that's absolutely right. And one of the things that I talk about in the book in the chapter about mindset is keep your eye out for green shoots out there. Don't be perpetually discouraged about things. And I see those among young people. Even just recently, you're seeing people, you know, entire classrooms full of kids who are taking off their mask in unison as a form of protest. You see what's happening right now with college football games and what they're chanting right there, you know, the Let's Go Brandon thing. You're seeing people who are young and who are realizing that they're not happy with the way things are going and they want to register a protest. And that protest may not be particularly well thought out or well formed or whatever, but, you know, the protests of younger folks usually aren't, right? They usually don't come from a place of having read and understood decades of history and economics and so forth, right? They just come from an attitude. And when I look at things that, forget whether I posted in the book or not, but there's a coloring book with an image in it where you're coloring a little kid with a mask on it. And I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, man, the punk rock scene in another 15 years is just going to be off the charts. People are going to grow up. They're going to realize that they were lied to, that they were terrorized for no particular reason. And you're already seeing this. They're beginning to go, no, I'm opting out of that. I'm rejecting that. I'm fighting back. And there's a lot of energy in that.
Well, that is good to hear. And that is exactly, of course, what I want to have happen, is that someday they find out, you remember all that you went through that was horrifying? Well, it didn't make a bit of difference. And after a while, you couldn't be that much of a blockhead that you didn't realize it wasn't making any difference. By that point, they just had to save face by continuing it, because if they abandoned it, they would be implicitly admitting it had all been a mistake from the beginning. Yeah, that's what I would like to get out there. And so what we need to build in the meantime is the online infrastructure to be able to convey a point like that without it being censored, and be able to issue, you know, release a documentary about it without having to worry that it'll be taken down in the first 10 seconds. And I think we're little by little making our way over there, because I think the progressive left has gone too far. I think they've bitten off more than they can chew, or I think they've been a little too ambitious in their goals, because they've awakened not just, you know, people on the fringes, but of tens of millions of people. And when you awaken and annoy tens of millions of people, they are going to start building things to protect themselves. So,
and they have to. Yeah, they absolutely have to. Yeah. Alternate infrastructure is 100% necessary on the long run. All of us are banned and have to find alternate outlets to communicate with the people we want to reach.
Yeah. And incidentally, I remind all the people, you know, I love you, all you folks who listen to me on YouTube. I'm telling you that the days are numbered on YouTube. I need you to start following me some other way. To get over on any of the, so far, podcasts have been the one thing that have been able to escape the hammer. So any podcast app you can listen to is going to be better than that, particularly because there are going to be episodes of the show, I've already done it twice, where I'm not going to release a YouTube version at all, because it's going to get taken down and it's going to get me booted off the whole platform. So instead, I have every single episode on my Odyssey channel. And so I have the redirect link to that, tomwoods.com/vid, V-I-D. So you go over there, and every single time you'll get my episode there. If you like to have a YouTube-like platform to listen with, then switch over to Odyssey, and you'll see every single, you will not miss an episode. Whereas I'm telling you, you're going to miss some of my best episodes because I don't dare put them up on YouTube. So
I second that. I also recently joined Odyssey, and actually I had on Jeremy Kaufman, the CEO of Odyssey, who also has a connection with the Free State Project and New Hampshire Libertarian Party there. I had him on my own show, so if people want to check that out, they can, and I do. I second that. Get on Odyssey, get on other platforms, and don't just depend on YouTube forever hosting your content.
And incidentally, for all the content creators out there, I'll just say it's very, very easy to get your stuff over on Odyssey. And in fact, they have a way where they can automatically suck all the content from your existing YouTube channel over to Odyssey automatically. You don't have to do anything manually. That sounds like a horrible job. They can do it for you automatically. I mean, of course, I have thousands of of videos and stuff on my channel, and they all got moved over to Odyssey with no problem at all. So worth checking out. And it's Odysee. All right, Matt, tell us one more time how people can get your book. And once again, it's Breakup, A Freedom Lover's Guide to Surviving the End of Empire. How do people read this?
They can go to mattasher.substack.com, and some of the chapters are free. Some of them require a subscription. If you go ahead and subscribe and then you send me an email to me@mattasher.com, me@mattasher.com, and let me know that you subscribe coming from the Woods show, then when the audiobook is released and I have some great people reading the different chapters of the book, then I will go ahead and send you along the audiobook for free as well when that drops.
All right, excellent. So we will, I'll put all that information up at tomwoods.com/1996 for everybody's convenience. And Matt, thank you for your time today and for the thought-provoking book.
Thank you, Tom, and congrats on the 2000th episode and the event. It was fantastic.
Thank you. All right, folks, I want to mention something about Matt Asher I neglected to mention, which is another reason he's a great guy. He is a supporting listener of The Tom Woods Show. And one of the benefits of being a supporting listener, one of the many benefits, as you will see, is membership inside The Tom Woods Show Elite, which is our censorship-free discussion group where adults can talk about important things without having some jerk treat us like we're seven and prevent us from interacting the way we want to with stupid fact checks by idiots or removing posts or purging people. That doesn't happen in the Tom Woods Show Elite. And if ever there was a need for free and open discussion among rational adults, it's right now. Now, if you are already in a situation where you are just overwhelmed with all the rational, open discussion you're having with like-minded people, then that's wonderful. Congratulations. Good for you. That's exactly the place you want to be. But for most of you, I bet you don't have that, and it sounds like something from some crazy fantasy world, but it really exists, the Tom Woods Show Elite. And you can join it through supportinglisteners.com. And in joining it, you are also supporting the old man here who keeps on churning out those podcast episodes and email newsletter issues for you every single weekday. So check that out. You're going to be helping me and helping you by checking out supportinglisteners.com. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.